Hello, everyone, and welcome to Griplock, Foundation Disc Golf's weekly podcast. I'm Hunter, joined as always by Trevor and Connor. We got quite the show this week, and start off with a little Patreon question of the week. Greg Barsby came out hot on Twitter.
Hot.
We got a little Texas States Silver Series recap, Trevor's trivia, Champions Cup registration. Why on earth we talk about that? You'll see in a second. But first, let's get into the Patreon question of the week. I thought there was an ad read. There's not. But I'll tell you a little about Patreon.
Yeah.
You know, you can go to patreon.com/foundationdiscgolf. You can join a free trial to get access to all of the Heiser Club members' sweet perks, including an exclusive video that should be coming out.
Could be today or
today or tomorrow.
It'll definitely be this week.
Yeah.
Well, it'll definitely be in the next couple days before the month ends.
Trevor and I built each other's bag with maniacal intent.
Maniacal.
So, very fun.
Maniacal disc golf.
And we went and played New London with that bag that was built with maniacal intent.
In the wind.
So, very fun video. You'll have to check out, again, free trial. So, no, you can just watch it for free.
The free trial is definitely worth it for that. And for mailbag is a good time.
And mailbag, that's where these questions come from, our weekly Q&A show over on Patreon. And we pick one of our favorite questions from the previous week's show and ask it here on air to give you a little taste. And this one came from Jason Dunwald. Sorry, Jason. What are your guys' opinions on the supposed change of the golf ball for the tour so it doesn't go as far? Could you ever see something similar in disc golf? So if you're not aware, what's going on in golf right now is the USGA, I believe, is imposing like a rollback of the golf ball technology, more or less. Is that a good way to put it?
Yeah.
Where, because players are now hitting the ball too far and too straight in a roundabout way, to make it simple, and outgrowing courses. And so they're trying to protect their courses. And so he's asking, could we ever see something similar in disc golf?
I'm trying to think if there's like
another
sport that does something like that.
I don't think our technology is advanced enough to roll it back. Because like, well, right now, what would we roll back?
That's to mids? What I was about to say is, my question is, first of all, I disagree with the golf ball thing. I think, I'm pretty sure I do, at least. I need to research more about everything I do. And I, for disc golf, I definitely disagree with it. But mostly to Hunter's point, if you were to roll back a disc right now, like, if you were to impose something like that, what would you do? Like, what would be your way of doing it?
Well, not to mention, we don't even have universal flight numbers.
It'd have to be a millimeter rim thickness.
Yeah, that makes sense.
So it couldn't be a certain speed.
It couldn't be a certain speed. Would be the only way to do it.
Yeah.
The problem is,
that's a terrible idea. It's such a terrible idea.
Well, because you could, let's say you rolled it back to what would be about a 9 speed.
That won't even do much.
That's what I'm saying.
You need to go to like a 7 speed.
Paul's on record saying the Onyx, which is a 10/9 speed, is the farthest flying disc in his bag. Whether or not that's true, who knows? But like, they can crush 9 speeds.
Oh, yeah.
They're still throwing 550, 600.
The Valkyrie was the original distance record at like 700
Christian Sandstrom, 762, forehand.
It wasn't a forehand.
Scott Stokely was a forehand guy.
Yeah, you'd have to take it back to like literal 7 speeds.
FD is like one of the farthest flying discs in my bag.
Disc golf has a lot more things to figure out.
Well, I think
before they even have to figure it out.
In the sport, we still have to push our courses.
Yeah.
We should be outgrowing our courses right now.
Right.
So I think our courses, like, we're still in a developmental stage of the sport. We're way too young. Whereas golf has courses that have like hundreds of years of history that they're now outgrowing. I think that's where this is coming from.
It is crazy to think that, like, imagine if disc golf discs do like 10 years from now become like so much more advanced and go so much further, and like we'd roll them back to like now. And they're like, oh, we're throwing Star Destroyers, man. We're not throwing our stinking Teflon Maximuses.
That was a really fun name.
Thank you.
What I don't like about it is that I feel like it's not unique to disc golf, but I feel like it's exaggerated in disc golf, where such a big part of the sport is the tools. Like, the discs are so important in disc golf, and like, I don't think that we should penalize companies for making good discs. And like, I think that part of the race should be, like, part of the sport should be the race to making the best disc. And I think that's what makes it exciting. That's what makes people want to try different discs and stuff like that. And I don't know. I think that's an exciting part of it for viewers as well, which helps the sport grow and make money, is that viewers are excited by what kind of disc people are throwing.
It is. Imagine, like, the marketing pretzel. And it's different. Like, disc golf, there's only one tool, essentially, a part of the throw, whereas golf, you have the ball and the club. But imagining the marketing pretzel that you're put in when all of a sudden you're Titleist and you're told you got to roll back your golf balls, but you still have to market it as like the choice of pros. But now people know that's not really the ball that they're using, and they know it's hindered, but how do you get that message across, but still say it's a good marketing pretzel is what that is. Like, I don't
You just come out with a new ball, all one name, and then you just hit the same ball as pros.
golf ball.
No, like you still have the Pro V1. But then like have like a Pro V1 tour ball.
Well, that's the other question is
but
like,
then keep the same technology in the tour ball.
Are they even going to sell those balls to like,
no, why would you?
To consumers?
I would make consumers think you are. I'd put Tour on there and sell them the same ball.
Well, that's
be like, oh my word.
That's
Rory's
that
only hitting
of,
this thing 280, dude. I'm hitting it 280.
That is something that a lot of people don't realize about the
also
golf
going to
world.
Play a casual round. I'm never changing out my balls.
This
I'm
is,
keeping my old balls. You
this
know?
Is something
well,
in
also,
disc
like, I'm not even close to good enough to know. I'm hitting freaking pebbles from Target.
Yeah, I'm barely even. I barely can
notice. Come on, Trevor. Hype him up. This dude, plus four handicap. Wild.
No. The thing that's interesting about golf and a lot of pro sports compared to disc golf is right now, if you were to go to foundationdisc.com and buy a Star Destroyer, that is the same Star Destroyer that is accessible to the pros. That is the same one. In the golf world, that Chrome Soft, Callaway Chrome Soft golf ball that you just bought from Dick's is not the same Chrome Soft that Phil Mickelson or whoever is out playing. There is balls and clubs that are specifically given to tour players and for a number of reasons. Sometimes it just has to do with like with clubs. Sometimes it's just the building process of them, like how they're built with better adhesives and things like that. But like I used to know some guys that I worked with that were on like Callaway's like staff team and they would show me like the balls that they would get sent specifically that were like a different grade. It's basically a lot of like that industry, and this happens in hockey too with like hockey sticks is like there are websites you can go to get like pro stock is what they would consider them. And it's just like a different level of equipment, a different price. Soccer, they do it big time with the cleats. Like Nike will release a cleat and then they'll have what people call them rollbacks, and they'll have the $400 version of that cleat that is literally pro stock, and then they'll have a $300 version and a $200 version and a $100. They all look the same, but there's just differences in the materials and slight differences that make them, it looks like you're buying the fancy one, but you're really not. And that is something in disc golf that does not happen. Like in hockey,
it should.
There's literally, in hockey too, for marketing, I'm surprised disc golf hasn't caught on to this one yet. Well, they kind of have. This actually does kind of happen in disc golf. But in hockey, you'll have a player who loves a certain stick. But a company is trying to, they don't want to sacrifice their players' playing ability. They care about their players, but they want to market a new stick. So they will wrap or paint that stick with a different wrap that makes it look like the one they're marketing when it's still the old stick. And that's something that kind of has happened in disc golf between manufacturers.
It's just stamp wiping.
Stamp wiping, but it hasn't happened where like you don't, I don't think you've ever seen like Paul throwing a disc stamped Zeus, but it's really a nuke. Yeah. Like that hasn't quite, I don't think it's gotten to that level yet, but that would be an interesting thing to start see happening.
No, in my opinion, though, because
I was a company man.
Because what's happening right now?
How
is
that not what's the isn't
false
there a
advertising?
Law, yeah,
well,
isn't
well,
there
not
as
advertising.
Long
they're
as he's, as long as Paul's not saying
he's not
this is a Zeus.
Yeah, he's true. Not advertising. He's just using it. It just happens because
he used AVR stamp destroyers.
Yeah, people.
And there, I remember there's multiple times where people were like, "How is Paul throwing a putter that far?" And you'd be like,
"No,
it's a destroyer."
That makes sense.
But. What is going on in disc golf right now that I think this would be why I think this should happen, like pro model versus normal model, is like so many people get into the sport, they immediately look at the pros, which happens in every sport. You look at the pros, and I want to wear the same shoes that LeBron James is wearing.
Yeah.
I want to throw the same disc that so-and-so is throwing. Problem is, similar to golf, in this sport, we are limited. There's a reason we're not on tour. Mm-hmm. So my arm speed isn't Paul's.
Yeah.
So if I have to get a disc to fly like Paul's Forces fly or Ricky's Enforcers or Calvin Heimberg's Destroyers, it's not going to be the Force, the Destroyer, or the Enforcer. It's going to be probably, for me, like the Zeus, the probably like a Wraith or a Crate, honestly, from Innova, and like a freaking Trespass probably from Dynamic, something like that.
Right.
Trespass might be too flippy. But what I'm surprised a company like hasn't done is, okay, Paul's going to make his entire lineup the Zeus, and then we'll just make it in like a special blend of plastic or like a pro molded Zeus or whatever that like only our Discraft's touring pros have access to this Zeus. So they're throwing the Zeus, but AM's at home watching, it's flying just like the stock Zeus will fly for them.
Yeah.
You see what I'm saying?
Yeah, I don't think I like that.
I think
because
the only issue with that
because I think part of the learning curve in disc golf is just learning your arm speed. And then also, like, there are AMs or less than AMs. There are rec players who throw who throw plenty far enough to be throwing an actual.
But then at that point, you know, I'm not going to go throw a force because Paul throws a force.
But it's but
they should make a force and a force LS.
The problem is what that could lead to is
light speed,
because Connor is right. There is a lot of AMs that do have distance, and like it's pretty common, really. And and if you could just, now you're just going to be misleading people if it's not common.
Well, we saw Trilogy do it similarly of like the Saint and the Saint Pro, and the whole idea of the Saint Pro was the Saint Pro flew for your favorite pro, like the Saint will fly for you.
Yeah, but it came out. It came out with different flight numbers. Like it was very.
No, yeah. They,
as long as it was
publicly released,
as long as it's obvious. Like I like the idea of them. Like
they should at least make it in different plastics where the pros models aren't beaten up as much, unless they want them to. Where you can buy the stock ESP one, or they can buy the, or they can just get a pro one with carbon fiber or some crap in it.
I just don't like them marketing a disc that me getting a disc that is not properly.
You wouldn't know.
I understand. Well, I know right now.
It's still deceptive, though.
Right now, I don't.
Well, I mean,
I'm
just saying that happens. Like, if I went and bought the irons Tiger Wood uses off the shelf, his irons are gonna be completely different from the ones I'm hitting.
I get that.
Just some.
Like his staff shiftness, probably his grips might be different. The freaking grooves.
But discs and golf clubs are much different in the way that they interact. Like you can still hit the golf ball, and it's also so much more subtle to somebody who isn't experienced. Whereas the flight of a disc is a very obvious thing, and it's also very easier to achieve. Like you are never going to hit a golf ball like Tiger Woods can hit a golf ball and see that flight. You get a lot closer to throwing a disc hard and flat enough to get it to fly like a pro could.
Yeah, you'll get close. So, but like, I'm just saying, like,
the line is a little bit blurrier.
That is one of the bigger barriers, not barriers to entry, but like one of the easiest, earliest mistakes that players
do. It does happen to everybody. But I also think
they just buy what the pros throw.
I also do think, though, it's like the first question that people usually will ask, and it's a very simple explanation. You know, it's not like it's that can, like, once you just say, well, that pro throws harder, so you should try different discs, that's a pretty easy thing to
grasp.
But
it doesn't work.
Like, and if anything,
if you go to the course, so many people still have destroyers in their bag that shouldn't have destroyers in their bag.
Well, right, but
because you want it, and there's nothing wrong with wanting
to
do
that. I think people at that point, they know, like, sure, they know, they just choose.
But
not
like,
to.
How much cooler would it be if I was throwing that destroyer and I was getting it to flip up and turn like the pros do? I would feel cooler about myself.
I mean, I don't know. Just don't hit enough trees with it, and you will.
That's fair.
That's the other thing about discs is like there is no disc that is that advanced. That is like so hard, because there are golf clubs that are so hard to hit, but like discs, like there's not one out there that is so difficult to throw that it's just like unachievable.
You mind if I ask a question real quick?
Yeah.
So the whole point of this like question from, what was his name again?
Jason.
Jason. Thank you, Jason. Was like basically disc golf is really easy. Compared to a lot of other sports. I don't mean the throwing. I mean the competition-wise and scoring. Brody talks about this a lot. Disc golf is really easy scoring-wise. And people are looking for ways to make disc golf harder, but I just don't really think it's in the discs. I don't think it's like what the thing with rolling back the disc to make them not go as far. I just don't think that's how we make disc golf harder, because I think it's just stupid all around. I think it's dumb for the sport, because I think there's no way the sport is going to grow more by doing that, because it's not as entertaining to watch and it's not as entertaining to do. If you can't throw a disc as far as that's neither, which I know
wouldn't roll back to the public.
Yeah, you're right. But I would still say like viewer wise, it wouldn't be nearly as fun to watch.
Yeah, I would say the course design, and even if to get more extreme, baskets being smaller.
That's what I was going
to
say.
A
the main thing
place to start.
The main
as,
thing I hear with people saying,
"Well,
like,
he said, could you ever see?" So this, in my mind, this question is more so like, could disc golf get to
right
a
now.
Point where? Because right now, we don't have like, we're such a new sport. We don't even have a basic, 100% accurate based on science, this is how you throw a disc.
Right. Yeah.
And
yeah,
also,
yeah,
discs have only evolved like since the beginning of our sport. Like they evolved pretty quickly, but then like for how many years now have they been exactly the same? Like golf, like just continually with the backing of science and technology, just kept pushing the envelope. But now, admittedly, for the past little while, golf has started to stall a little bit, and like the next driver comes out and is like, is that really any different? Not really. But for during its heyday of development, golf technology was just skyrocketing. And disc golf has not, you could argue that like that was the very beginning period, but there's probably another period to come, hopefully, of disc development to where the materials and the processes and everything gets better. I don't know. Maybe there's only so much you can do with a disc. There's definitely a lot more you can do with a golf club and a golf ball because there's so many more pieces involved. But, like, what about the idea of discs that have interchangeable weighting systems like drivers do, to where you can move around weight in the disc? Like, there's so many things that haven't been explored probably yet. So it's so early to tell.
I will say players are getting to where, like, now that it's a much more attainable thing to be actually sustained on tour,
yeah,
and like have that be your only focus. I was like watching people throw. It might have been, I don't know if it was this past weekend, Texas States, or 2 weeks ago at Open in Austin, but I was watching people and like they're throwing 450 and the disc is never leaving hyzer. Mm-hmm. And I was thinking, I was like, when I first started watching pros, like a pro that pushed 400 on hyzer was like, mm-hmm, wild. Like, mm-hmm, you didn't see it. Like they were flex. Like, flex shots got over 500, but now flex shots get over 600.
Yeah.
And like the farthest throwers on tour were barely pushing 600. And now it's like, there's probably 15 guys out there that are, they're range finding shots, and they're like it was this past weekend. I think it was AB's drive went 585 uphill.
Yeah, there's
guys. That's crazy. And I was like, people, like, in the last 7 years, these guys are throwing so much farther.
Mm, yeah.
And I think some of it is disc technology, because I also remember when I was in college, which I would argue I threw farther in college, it took everything in me to get a hyzer 350. Now I can get a hyzer 350, I'm not going to say easily, but pretty consistently. And, like, it's not weird for me to get a golf line, so not in a field 400 feet, but, like, on a course 400 feet, like a disc that'll flip up to flat and hyzer, and it ends up getting within C1 of a 400-foot hole.
Mm-hmm.
But, like, that didn't used to be a thing. So I do think that golf, like, disc golf technology has developed more than we think, because I think it's between that and understanding of the throw. But I think the next big wave of disc golf evolution will be like, okay, why do we throw this way? And then how players will start being like, how can I maximize this now that I know this is, like, we know the power pocket, we know where we pull through, but we know that because we've just seen other people do it.
We think we know.
But like, what happens when someone gets in and is like, oh, wait a second. If I curl my wrist a little bit, my RPMs go through the roof.
I've said it so many times, like, when the science gets involved in disc golf and when we start learning like objective things about the throws, those first few people who come out with that will be so ostracized, because like it happens in baseball a lot. Like the guys who are like really into that, like they do get ostracized because people just reject that idea that what they've been doing this whole time is wrong, you know, to get better RPMs and stuff like that. But I will just laugh so hard if like the real way to get distance or like have efficiency or whatever is just like the goofiest thing that we never would have thought of. Like
it's not going to surprise me.
It'll be my favorite thing if it's like something that people have said is a bad habit.
It's not going to surprise me if the way to throw a disc as far as possible is to round the crap out of yourself. Because like think of it, like that logically makes sense. Like if I reach back and curl my wrist a lot more and like come around and whip more,
still wouldn't change the idea of
no accuracy, it would lower your accuracy,
but it would it's gonna be funny.
But like you're like imagine if you see like, oh, I have a wide open drive, I don't have to care about accuracy, and you see pros just start like rounding like crazy and everyone's like, what? And it's like, well, yeah, when I do that my RPMs go
they're starting to do like 3D motion captures. Like there was a study going on in Texas.
I feel just, like we only ever see Instagram stories of that.
University is doing a study down in Texas. They were doing it like last month. They had a bunch of pros out there, so hopefully we're starting to get like, I've heard of some companies developing a lot. I think we are on the cusp of like a technological breakthrough in the sport, to where companies, it's only going to take one company to bring something to market, and everybody who's been holding back their ammunition is just going to start throwing. Because if somebody jumps ahead in disc development and technology, they can leave the other companies in the dust really quickly if it's better. Because imagine if your player is now getting an edge, like it's going to be crazy. So hopefully
the reason I was saying that about form, we'll move on to the Barsby take here after this, but the reason I was thinking of like curling your wrist and stuff is like when Brody was trying to figure out how to throw farther,
mm-hmm,
he was doing field work when he lived here like a year ago, and he's like, I figured out something huge. He's like, when I need to do a distance shot, I just need to curl my wrist. He's like, it sacrifices accuracy, but I throw like 60, 70 feet farther. And I was like, Brody, that's so dumb. Like, no, that's not how you throw a disc. And then I was sitting there, I was like, why do I think that?
I've noticed that whenever I do that, I get way more spin.
Yeah, he was like, I get so much more snap, and it's so much easier to get like a full flight and everything. And I was like, that's just something that, like, in my head, I'm a very much like, I was like this with basketball, I'm like this with pretty much anything. It's like, I'm taught to do something the right way, or what's perceived as the right way. Anything that goes against mm-hmm. that, I'm just like, eh, no, because then you're going to, but then when I was saying with Brody, I'm like,
firsthand with my putting the other day.
I'm like, well, wait a second, like, why does curling your wrist actually that bad? Like, if I need more distance, why is it that bad? Well, but like, I think that's kind of what you're saying. It's like, I would be like the old regime of disc golf, of like, someone comes out and's like, this is how you throw far. I'm like, idiot, but your front leg's not even bracing,
if you
bro.
Saw the data in front of you, though, you wouldn't deny it.
Well, no, like, I would go to a field right now and curl my wrist, and the second I saw myself do it and felt it, I'd be like, oh, shoot.
I've definitely been stuck there where, like, I'm super judgmental about someone's game just based off of what their throw looks like, and I realized that whenever we started going to Bogey Bro battles, and, like, you guys, I feel like you guys have very, like, this is disc golf form-looking form. Like, where, like, you don't do anything crazy weird, where, like, this looks like you guys studied disc golf form, and you, that's how your game is, like that. So, you guys have pretty normal
like Trevor
form.
Studied Kevin Jones' form.
Exactly, yeah. And,
TJ USA.
But we would show up to Boogie Bro battles, and I would see the guys throw off the first tee, and I'm like, they're about to get destroyed. And I'm not even looking at where their disc is going. I'm just looking at their form, and like, their form looks goofy. Like, it doesn't look like Paul Macbeth. Basically, just how close to Paul Macbeth do you look, that's how good at disc golf you are. And then we get to hole five, and I'm realizing these guys are throwing like 450 feet and looking goofy as crap. And I'm like, I've got to get out of my head that how good you look whenever you throw means how good you are at disc golf, because that is so far from true.
A lot of ways make it work.
Also, I got the whole wrist spinning thing. Whenever I was in college, I like tried it out, and every once in a while I tried it out again, but yeah, I'm not accurate with it, but I definitely feel more spin. I got it from watching Ricky, because I noticed that whenever Ricky throws, he curls his wrist a good bit, because he's like almost around the disc.
Yeah.
And I noticed, I just was like, that's really weird how he does that, and I just figured that's wrong, but then I tried it in a field one time, and I was like, whoa, that kind of feels, there's something there for sure.
That's what I'm saying, man. We just don't know. All right, Barsby tweeted this out after the Open at Austin last week, and I thought it was a good, interesting point. So he said, last weekend in Austin, we played a course on the DGPT, which has never been contested. Do you think this is okay? Anyone wanting to host an A-tier has to establish for 2 years, except the biggest tour. PDGA getting bent over here, ? Why I thought it was interesting is I think that this is a game where like the Pro Tour is just separate from the PDGA, because in my opinion, I don't think it's a wrong thing for a brand new course to be like developed for the Pro Tour, and the Pro Tour be able to be like, this course is good enough, let's just go get it on the course. Yeah. But I think the PDGA does have to have guidelines to protect A tiers, because they can't go vet every A tier.
Right.
So I think that's kind of the weird line, but I think it's where he makes a solid point in that like the way the disc golf has been ran up to this point. What happened with an elite series being on a course that was basically just designed and according to him had never been contested, which to me means no PDGA event or no tournament has ever happened out there. This was the first thing. And Chris Clemens responded and basically was like, yeah, I thought silver events were kind of this way. Like for the Pro Tour, we're supposed to go to a silver event and then here. And then he said something along the lines of like, there was a lot of, the ball was dropped quite a bit for an elite series or something along those lines. So I don't know exactly what Clemens was referring to, but on the flip side of that coin, this was the Open at Belton and they moved it to Austin and moved, and in doing so had to make a new course. So tournament wise it existed, because like I would wonder A tier wise, let's say the Battle for Bedford was an A tier every year, Goliath goes in, can we not add that to the it's not an A tier, so it wouldn't matter, but could we not add that to the rotation PDGA-wise because the course is brand new?
Yeah, I mean, the reason that the course is moved and whatnot, and like why they're erring towards the golf courses, is they're trying to accommodate, you know, spectators in an event. Like that's their main motive for going to properties like that. It is really different, like you mentioned. Like it's not the same scenario because there is, the Pro Tour is going to these courses and vetting them. So it's not like they're just kind of showing up like, surprise, here's the course. That's not happening. I would prefer to see, like, he's right in a sense that, like, I would prefer to see courses be vetted out. Now, I got to talk to Gannon about it last week, and he said he kind of ended up liking the course. I mean, obviously, he won there, but he liked it. I think there were some loud. He made it sound to me like there was a lot of loud pros that didn't like it, but he also kind of alluded to the fact that a lot of them didn't play well, and like that's just kind of how it can be. Like, admittedly, he said, like, you know, if he shows up to a course and plays bad, like, you're not really gonna like it. Like, so I think it was a polarizing course, but I do think it got a worse rep in the public eye due to just some loud voices. But yeah, I think that there are only so many of these Elite Series events. There's only so many of them. They're a really big deal at this point. There's a lot at stake. Probably should be playing courses that have been had tournament play. Like, it is a little silly to think that you can just pop a course up and get the highest standard of event right there as your first event on the course. That is a little silly to me, and I think that it shows a lack of preparation, I guess. Like, if it's gonna be a new thing, like, let's be running tournaments, flex starts. Let's get feedback. Let's try to get some good pros out there to give feedback. Like, I can see where he's coming from, but I think referencing the PDGA and the A tier system is a little unnecessary, because like the PDGA, all of that, I don't know. It feels very separate and almost like archaic to me at this point. Like, the idea of the PDGA governing the Pro Tour, because like that doesn't seem to me what's happening. I think there's a happy little compromise where both kind of get to keep their power and be buddies. It's almost like a little truce that they have with one another, but like, it's not like the PDGA is going to be bossing around the Pro Tour.
Well, what I think will, at some point, and this is, I think this is just my opinion on what will eventually happen, but I think at some point, the PDGA won't like a move the Pro Tour makes. The PDGA will try to flex their muscles, saying, you can't do that. We're the PDGA, we're big and bad. Right. And the Pro Tour will be like, deuces. Because, like, at this point, what does the Pro Tour need the PDGA for? They have their own discipline system.
That's what I'm saying. They're not.
They have their own tour card system. They have their own standings that they can use everything for. Like,
they can survive without them.
And all they have to do is say, this tournament's playing with PDGA rules. Like, the PDGA rules are in effect of this event, which is what, like, when we showed up to unsanctioned Winter League events, that's what they would always say, is like, PDGA rules are in effect for this event. And it was like, oh, simple. Boom.
Yeah, they know where they sit. Like, it's not like they have some kind of power. But I think the whole situation, like, I agree that I think the courses should be vetted more, but I don't think the PDGA rule really matters.
Yeah, I don't think at the end of the day, I think the Open at Austin course did exactly what it should have done. I don't think it was the best to look at, but that's just, you're in Austin, Texas, and it hadn't bloomed yet.
There is always something to be said for, like, at what point should we... There are so many beautiful, like, amazing disc golf properties out there. Now, many of the time, do not align with population centers.
Yeah, I'd say that's the problem.
And good venues, because that is what the Pro Tour is prioritizing. And guess what? Ticket sales are a really big deal. Like, they drive a lot of income that is necessary for these events that's going to grow the sport. So you do have to focus on population centers and good venues as a priority. But, you know, hopefully the day will come where, like, every single stop is, you know, just like a very premier looking course.
Yeah. Well, there's always going to be the worst course on tour. There's no way around that. Yeah. You can have, like, perfect courses and one of them is going to be the worst.
Right.
But I think that right now the Pro Tour is finding a balance of, like, I don't know disc golf in Austin. So, but let's just imagine that this course is close to Austin, but you drive an hour outside of Austin, or an hour and a half outside of Austin, in the middle of nowhere, but you're only an hour and a half outside of Austin, there's a perfect course. And it's like, this course is solid, this course is perfect, but this course can't really accommodate that many spectators, an hour and a half outside of Austin. The point that we're seeing the Pro Tours at is they're leaning towards technically the worst course of the two, in my opinion. I don't know if that exists here, but in some cases, it's like, it's going to be better to put them at the worst course of the two that can accommodate the event we want to run, that can bring in the spectators, that can actually have the spectators walk on the course, and the course is still good enough for the Pro Tour.
And like courses, still, and courses that get good cell reception.
Yeah.
That's another big, that is a
Northwoods
huge,
Black is on, I don't know how much longer they're going to go to Northwoods Black.
They're, yeah, they're only,
it's not great for
they're
spectators.
Only there because it's iconic, but
it's not great for spectators. It doesn't have cell reception. You can only cover nine holes of it, basically. I mean, at some point, I think we've seen the Pro Tour take that step in every other spot. The problem is, not really a problem, because it's a good problem, is Ledgestone has such a draw. It's an Elite Plus event. Mm-hmm. It has a huge purse every year. And the best two courses to do it at, play-wise, is Northwoods Black and Eureka Temp. But at some point, I think we're seeing the Pro Tour kind of take this stance elsewhere. I'm like, I wonder at what point does that translate into some of the more historically praised courses. That's not the word I was looking for, but it works here.
There's a lot of very popular courses on tour right now that will not survive the next decade, I would have to imagine. And like some of them, like potentially Winthrop, because they're just at public universities, like for reasons like that. But others like Northwoods, like you said, like that just won't fly forever. Like having some of the course not being filmed because of no cell reception. Like they have to be able to use what infrastructure they have. So,
yeah. But I do think it's something that isn't, as it happens, it's not going to be the most popular thing as this evolution of disc golf happens with the players. But I think that they're making the decision for the betterment of the tour, the betterment of the sport, and the betterment of the fans. And it's not even at the sacrifice of the players, because the course is better than a lot of courses that used to be on tour. I mean, it played well. It did its job. Sure, it had a few funky shots, but it didn't. I've played a lot funkier shots in Woods than what happened in the Open out there.
Yeah.
So it didn't even push the gimmickiness of what you could ask a disc to do.
Yeah.
And so like every shot it asks, it's like there is a way you can make a disc do that. Right. And it's not like it's asking you to throw a tilt on a Spikeheiser Annie and get it to flex out somehow.
Mm-hmm.
It's like it's asking you to throw just a Spikeheiser, or it's asking you for a late flip up that rides to the right. And Brody made one heck of a point, one of his best points, which was like, this course in the Open caused a lot of people to be like, this is so gimmicky, I don't like this. He's like, but if there were trees everywhere, these are like easier shots than we're asked to throw in the woods, and less gimmicky shots than we're asked to throw in the woods. Like if some of these holes, if they were a wooded fairway, you'd be like, oh, this is a super easy woods hole.
Yeah.
But since it's in the Open, you see just like the shot and you want to throw the natural hyzer, then it makes you feel like it's gimmicky. That is a great point.
Really good point.
So, but no, I do think there's something to be said, but also I trust the Pro Tour to vet these courses, because if they mess up, they're risking their own product.
We need the graphics capability to like add wooded fairways.
Like, we need like the Jomez 3D renderings from back in the day.
I was going to say, with that, it's impressive on the course to be able to force people to throw those shots without having to have that much wood.
It is true.
So it's a more viewable course with just as interesting. Like,
well, I think too,
I think
like,
that makes that's very interesting.
The age we're in of course design, courses have to be pushed in weird ways because we haven't figured it all out yet. We have to figure out how to make courses challenging to the top pros. And so in that, there's going to be some courses that just people just don't like.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And this one, I don't even think it's people don't like. I think it's the wrong people didn't like it, or the right people, depending on which side of the fence you're on. Yeah. Where it was just people who are a little bit louder and their opinions respected a little bit more didn't like this course.
Not to mention if you're in a group and you guys are all kind of picking fun at it, it's really easy for that energy to kind of take off and all just not to like it. So.
Yeah.
Easily.
Yeah. Now, flip side of this coin, I heard great stuff about this Texas State course. They also moved Texas State to Houston, Texas.
This course looked fun.
But they did downgrade it to a silver event.
Mm-hmm.
So, which is interesting to me. In my opinion, I would have rather seen the Open at Austin as a silver event, and Texas State's the course they played here in a lead event, but it doesn't really matter. MPO, we had Calvin Heinberg taking it down, Anthony Barella and Joel Freeman tying for second. And then on FPO, we had Sayananda taking down Kristen Tatar in second and Owen Scoggins in third. Main storyline here, obviously, was Sayananda with a very impressive win. Was a silver
super
event,
impressive.
But, I mean, essentially the whole field was their only person. And by whole field, I mean the top players that have been present this year. Only person missing was Paige Pierce. Valerie Mandahano still is injured, so she wouldn't have been there either way. But some people, this is the first they've heard of Sai. She's been around several years. She's appeared on some league cards here and there. She won, I believe, Junior World back in the day, maybe like 2016, somewhere in that range. But in my opinion, this is her first like eye-opening win. This is her first like, okay, I've arrived win.
She made a whole bunch of putts.
Yes.
She was just making putts from everywhere. That's what was really getting her.
And they looked effortless.
Yeah.
It was kind of a, she was a unique putting style. And like a lot of times she was throwing in circle two putts. She actually, I think she led the field with circle two putting percentage, but she was throwing in circle two putts and it looked like her lower body like wasn't in it.
She kind of just, like, spinning just kind them of out like, there and fading them in real nice and easy.
Even that putt on 18, she won by, what did she win by? She won by three or four,
I think.
And she hit this like close to circle two putt.
I know she
on
had
18.
Three putts for the win from circle two, and she made it.
Yeah,
she decided to just putt it.
Like lay up and tap out. But no, she had a putt for two from 38 feet and just drained it for the win.
Yeah.
Wow.
Pretty wild.
Pretty interesting. Like
she won by three.
FPO never fails to surprise. Like, not a name that I would. You know, I've seen her name around the leaderboard. I'm not super familiar with her game because she's not playing on lead cards often or even chase cards. But undeniably a very impressive win.
Yeah.
You beat Kristen. You know, you beat Owen. There's players out there.
Missy was out there. Kat was out there, came in fifth.
Yeah. So I'm not sure, honestly, is the bigger storyline Cy winning or is it Kristen? And like those players not being able to win in a weaker field, it's very impressive. It's like, I don't know. It's almost shocking. I was very surprised to see that. And it's like, what does that mean for the rest of the season? Like, is this a player that I need to be like really watching? Like, that is going to be consistent this year? Or is this just like, it is the sport of golf, and therefore, like, you can just have a weekend. Like,
yeah.
You can just go out there and play the best golf of your whole life and win, and then we might never see you again. Like, you just never know. Because like putting, circle two putting in particular is something that can very much come and go. Like
yes.
it can be hot fire one day and cold ice the next. So like that's the thing where it's like if she doesn't make all the circle two putts, if like her putt wasn't on the way it was, then maybe this goes completely different and we're not even talking about it right now. So yeah, I don't know. A very, very quality win though. Really, really cool.
Yeah, because if you watched her play this weekend, she seemed like, it wasn't a shock for her to win.
Yeah.
Like you watch it, she seemed in control pretty much every round. She was draining putts, mainly circle two putts. Looking at her stats, she had almost 9 strokes on the field gained putting, but 8 of those came from circle two.
Right.
Only so gained one stroke on the field.
Right,
she won.
There. That's the difference.
She led the field in circle two putting at 43% on the weekend. The next person was at 31%. So
43.
She was just
insane.
Drilling them in. And then on top of that, she only threw OB one time to Kristen's 4, so they would have been tied had Kristen only won OB once,
yeah.
If you want to look at the stat that way. But yeah, I mean, essentially she won it on the putting green. Kristen had 3 strokes on her, gained tee to green, and she gained those almost 3 strokes back putting. But if you look at just this weekend, yeah, you're like, if she can play like that, it's going to be hard for people to beat her.
Putting was,
is what it looks like.
Putting
but
is always a tool. You know, it's always a huge tool, but it is just something that can come and go the easiest.
Yeah, if you look at the start of her season, she started 26th, 25th, 9th. So this was a surprise.
Yeah, it was. It'll be a name that I'll be paying attention to now, you know, and we'll just see what happens. Momentum, you know, it's a thing.
Now, Calvin, on the flip side, is having one of the better starts to the season in MPO that we've seen in recent years.
Yeah,
his start so far, he won Vegas, then went third, third, and then just won a silver event. So he's went 1-3-3-1
Calvin,
to start off his season.
Calvin is in a scary place right now, and he went out there and just took care of business. It was a never falter, just kind of just do your thing type of win for Calvin. And there's some good players out there. Was not a crazy strong field, but there were certainly quality players and players that were shooting really good scores at times. And Calvin went out there and just handled business.
Yeah, bullied him. Won by 6.
It's pretty awesome. Calvin Heinberg is awesome at disc golf right now. And he went
10 under, 13 under, 10 under.
I'll tell you right now, like somebody needs to slow him down because at this point, he's going to win a lot this year. Like he is going to win probably 4, 5, 6 times. He's going to win a major too. Like he looks so good this year. His game is like just clicking right now.
Yeah, he seems very scary out there. Another surprise in the field was Gannon Burr, 19th.
Well, Gannon, if you go to his round one, I would be very curious to know what happened to him on the front nine of his first round. Because round two, he came back and fired 10 under, which is like normal or good even for the field. That round one, was it?
He was all over the place. He shot one under round one.
He went bogey, birdie, par, double birdie, bogey, birdie, bogey, bogey. Like, he made all those bogeys on the front.
Was day one pretty windy or no? Am I thinking the wrong tournament?
I think the wind was up the entire weekend.
Yeah.
But, like, he had some... It seemed like he was having just some inconsistency issues. It's not a crazy story. I'm certainly surprised being as consistent as he was and also coming off of a win. Very weird to see him finish that far down the leaderboard, but there's only so many players that can be held in that regard of, like, they just will not have a bad weekend.
Yeah.
And it only happens for so long. And right now, Calvin is that player. Like, Calvin, if he goes to a silver event or even an elite series right now and finishes, like, outside the top 20, we'd be like, oh my gosh, what happened?
Yeah.
And that's just like, it's almost a compliment if we're shocked that you finished 14th at a silver series, because it's like, that's how good you've been recently that surprised us. But yeah, the real story there is Calvin. I mean, Calvin is just, he is terrifying right now to play against.
Yeah. Now, this other player, we don't have him in our top 10. And I'm going to just see, did you read my notes before I knocked down? Okay. He was staring at my screen. I was like, please don't. I want to play a game.
I was just aimlessly looking at Calvin's name.
I'm really impressed that you didn't get upset at him, Hunter. I'm very impressed.
Didn't read it. If I would have read it, he would have got upset.
Well, but I'm impressed that while he saw you looking, he didn't start yelling at you.
I wanted to play this game, and I was going to be upset if he ruined it. Okay. So I'm going to tell you this person's finishes, and I want you to guess who they are.
Okay.
This is this year so far.
Okay.
I'm not going to tell you this most recent weekend because that might give it away.
Okay.
So I'm going to just tell you the first three Elite Series events. Mm-hmm. This person has went 14th, 10th, 3rd. And he's not in our top 10.
14th, 10th, 3rd.
We've snubbed him.
3rd at Open at Austin.
Mm-hmm. 14th at Vegas, 10th at Waco. And then 3rd.
Oh,
definitely a top 10 player.
Dang.
I'm trying to remember, coming down the stretch, who is it? Joel Freeman?
I'm so curious right now.
No, Joel Freeman's in our top 10.
Is he in our top 10? All right, give me one more guess.
Joel Freeman's not in our top 10, but it's also not Joel Freeman.
Okay, well, that's my actual guess.
That's your guess. Okay.
The other name that was floating in my head was Vino Makala.
Also not him.
Okay.
The proctologist, James Proctor.
Ah.
And he just finished 4th at this silver event.
James Proctor's good at disc golf.
So he's went 14th, 10th, 3rd, 4th.
He's kind of dirty. He
is being snubbed.
I obviously watched the whole video of him playing with Brody in their doubles battle. He's dirty.
I watched that doubles battle as well. Mm-hmm. Very interesting game. Form is interesting. Yeah. Really quick pull through.
National champion, I believe.
He reminds me a lot of Wiggins. His form, it's
kind
of weird. It's very muscly.
Yeah,
If that makes any sense, it's a very power.
Proctor
throw.
Is good. He's very good. We knew he was going to be dangerous being out on tour full time. Good.
Because he used to always he loved, and he would pop onto the tour, make some noise,
backhand,
and then just disappear. And you're always like, I wish this guy was on tour. He is now, and
he doesn't throw a lot of
popping off.
What is it that he won a couple years ago? Player.
Maybe the San Francisco.
He won something a couple years ago that surprised everybody. I can't remember what it was.
I'll pull it on.
But yeah, he's you're right. That sounds like a snub. We're gonna have to take that into account.
Yeah, we're not gonna do an update of the power rankings today, but we'll take this event into the account for the power rankings in the future.
Well, you know why they call him the proctologist, right?
Because his name is James Proctor.
Because he finds the gaps.
That's funny. That's funny.
So
I came up with that joke while I was editing that video.
He won the Collegiate Disc Golf Championships in 2015, the year before my freshman
year. Did he go to Texas?
I don't think so. Maybe. I don't think it'll tell me what team he played for.
No, my freshman year is when a guy from Texas won.
Yeah. No,
What did you say he just won? What did you say he won?
I don't know. I think...
Oh.
Trying to figure out what he won that you would know?
Yeah, because I remember he won something and it was
St. Patrick's Classic in 2018?
Maybe.
San Francisco Safari. There's coverage of that. Central Coast did that. That was in 2019.
I feel like it was during. I feel like it was during Grip Locked.
He's had a lot of like. Good
he's had solid finishes. I think he came in top 3 at Portland. Maybe
that might be it. That might be what I'm thinking.
He's had some really solid finishes on the Pro Tour in recent years. But
I just remember being like, "Wow, this. I don't know who this guy is, but he kind of popped off." That's what I thought. I'll look him up again. It's not worth looking into. It's my bad.
No, it's worth it. Born in California. I don't know.
I forget where he went to school.
I think it might be Portland Open.
The reason I remember him winning, he came in ninth at Portland Open. The reason I remember him winning collegiate nationals is he did it in the bag.
Oh, okay, here's him putting right after.
That's cool.
And it said
his bag would be really interesting.
He played for Nevada Reno.
Like Nevada University Reno.
Yeah.
Random.
Because the Innova did the in the bag after, and it was like in the bag with collegiate champion. I remember watching James Proctor, and I watched it like 30 times.
I watched the one they did a lot with that Jared.
I do remember, whatever his last name was.
Oh, is it Owen? No.
No.
Orn?
Mm-mm. I forget what his last name was. He had like a really sick bag. And it was an Innova guy. And I remember watching that one. And he messed around on tour a little bit. But he never really did anything too crazy.
Jared Rohn.
Yeah, I've seen that one a whole bunch.
Yeah. Connor, I can't find what it was.
I don't know either, but it's okay.
It was probably Portland opening came top 10. I'm assuming Proctor was on Prodigy.
I didn't know that.
Oops, I just messed up.
Was he?
Yeah, in 2015 he was. He's got a Prodigy in the bag on Prodigy's.
That must have been right after collegiate. All right, it's time for the fan favorite segment, Trevor's Trivia.
Okay, I've got a super random one, a super random game. Because I thought it was interesting. Sometimes I find myself just like perusing StatMando and finding things that are like kind of fun to look at.
Yeah.
And today, let me see if I can even like, where did I even find this? I think it was in the rankings galore. Basically, I would found
the, I have that list memorized, so
an interesting stat that I had never looked at before. The mobile version of this looks different than the other one. And now I'm going to be stressed out trying to find this.
Uh-oh.
Yeah, just give me this.
We are really falling apart right
the
now.
The stat that I stumbled upon was cash per throw. Really interesting.
Palmer Beth wins $52.81.
Basically.
He's in second at $37.49. Josh Anton, shockingly, in third. I'm just kidding. I don't know. I was thinking about going through the top 10 and seeing at what point are you like, does this dude actually know it?
How did it sound? It sounded really good.
The first two sounded really good.
I'll just Google it. But basically, the way we're going to play this game is I'm going to give you a few references just so you like even understand where to start.
You're going to quote your sources.
Can we work together?
No.
Dang it.
But I'm going to give you
myself with these games.
Well, this one's going to be pretty tough for either of you. And also, like I said, I'm going to give you some references so that you are not
at least so our guesses don't sound ridiculous,
right? Because like
I appreciate that the first guess you would make would just be so far off.
I just don't want to sound like an idiot, player profiles, okay. So I will give you a few for reference, and this is FPO and MPO, and then what I'm going to do after that is I am going to pull up Instacart and I'm going to give you a grocery item. I'm not going to tell you the price of it. And you're going to have to try and guess a player whose cash per throw is closest to the value of that grocery item.
I love it.
So basically, guess a player that a big crew once could buy me a
The
name bowl of this ramen. Game is...
We're at Kroger. It's called...
Disc golf...
It's called Trevor's Trivia.
Yeah, dude. What the okay?
heck? I feel like there's got to be some kind of pun there.
Here's for reference, the leader all-time in cash per throw... is Paul Macbeth at $9.25.
$9.25. Yeah.
I will then
$37.50 or something like that.
I will then let you know that a player such as $9? James Conrad is at $4.04.
Okay.
That is your reference.
Okay, okay. And you said Paul's at like $9?
$9.25. Okay. Your first item is a party-sized bag of nacho cheese Doritos.
Do you tell us the price of that?
No, you have to.
We have to know the price.
It's a double guess.
I love this game. I know it.
And you don't have to get like you don't just say the player. You don't have to like make a guess at the price. You can talk aloud.
I have mine.
Okay.
I don't have mine yet. Give me a second.
This is easily the most random thing I've ever come up with, but for some reason, I just thought of like a Price is Right game, and they kind of used to do things like this.
This is a really funny game. I love Price is Right. I think I'll do great on the items. I would do terrible on the players.
It doesn't matter if you go over or not.
Well, then I'm going to just go James Conrad.
you cannot name James Conrad because I gave you the price. That would be cheating. No, no Paul and no James Conrad.
Well, now you change the rules on me.
I mean, that's fair.
Well, the problem is I couldn't think of someone in the same price range as James Conrad because
I'm locked in. I won't change my answer, but I want to go second just so I don't give it to Hunter.
Okay. I'm going to just go. I need someone near James Conrad, but who the frick is that? Because they need to be around the sport long enough. But they also need to be cashing a lot. Nate Sexton.
Okay. That's a good guess. I was going to go Chris Dickerson. I'm thinking the Doritos around $5 for a party size, maybe $6.
I was thinking like $3.89.
The price of Doritos is $5.89.
Okay, I said $5 or $6.
Well, I got the 89.
Dickerson's per throw is $5.69.
Wow.
I knew I was going to be good at this game, dude. I love the Price is Right.
Let me find Sexton.
I actually have never watched the Price is Right. I like games that
size. $3.60.
I just knew Sexton had that cash streak forever.
Yeah.
Because what I'm terrified of is you pick the wrong player that hasn't cashed a lot.
So.
Yeah, well, that, yeah. Yeah, yeah. For Hunter.
Like, if you go Big Germ. The dude hasn't cashed in like a year.
Yeah.
That's not accurate. I'm sorry, Big Jerm. I love you.
I'm terrified. That's the only one I'm going to close.
That was impressive.
So embarrassing.
Well, but at this point, I can't even catch up because you're 20 cent off. I just lost $3.
Now you're only $2.29 down.
Yeah, that's a lot in the grocery world.
Well, I mean, these guesses could go
That's
anywhere.
A singular.
I mean, that's a coupon right there.
The next one we have here is a value 44 pack of Gordon's fish sticks.
I mean, frick if I know, Ricky Wysocki. 44 fish sticks, it got to be like $8 at least.
Is that your guess?
Yeah, I just said Ricky.
I disagree. It's not going to be $8.
44 fish sticks?
Fish sticks are very cheap. I'm going to go Andrew Presnell.
I mean, Presnell's got to be like $2.
Yeah, this is going to be interesting. So the price of fish sticks is $6.39.
Oh!
Yeah, 44, Connor.
Wysocki's, yeah, but still they're fish sticks.
Wysocki's
they're not real.
Cash per throw is the second highest all time at $8.52.
I said it was around $8. That was I just assumed the fish sticks were going to be
$8. So that's $2.13
a dumb pick by me.
Different.
It was a dumb pick. I don't know why Andrew Presnell slipped out Presnell, of my mouth, but he did.
I'm going to have to command F him because he's probably not even on the like initial page. Okay.
You had to what him?
His is at $3.28.
Okay, all right.
Higher than I would have thought.
That was about what I was expecting. That was genuinely, I was thinking it was probably
$1.11. You thought you'd get 44
Listen,
fish
man,
sticks for $3?
Hey, so you gained almost $1 back on
I've never bought fish sticks before, okay?
All right.
But I was
thinking.
You weren't
buying 44 for $3.
I was thinking
bucks.
Of like when my dad was a kid for some reason.
Well, then he just flipped a dime at him. They said, here's 100.
We're going to do, we'll do.
I don't know how old your dad is. That
he's like 86.
Okay,
like that.
That's perfect.
We're going to do 4 of these total. I think that's a good number.
I don't want to play anymore.
The next one we have here is a box. This is a, hold on a second. I need to get the total info here. This is an 8-pack of lime LaCroix sparkling waters.
Ooh, an 8-pack. So no, not crazy.
You go first, Connor.
That's like my favorite thing we've ever done. I love
this game. This game. I just, for some reason, when we think about these games, every disc golfer eludes me.
Does the cash per throw include their AM career? Surely not.
Yeah, this,
here we go.
Oh, yeah. Everything. Well, oh, like dang. Not taking cash, you mean?
Yeah.
Oh, no. Okay. No, it's got to be clean.
I'm
going to
go. This might be a really stupid answer, but I don't care anymore. Well, not that I don't care. As in, like, I don't care as in, like, I'm okay looking dumb. Mm-hmm. Everybody knows that I'm dumb with this stuff. I'm going Gannon Burr.
Dang it. That's who I was thinking.
Okay.
I'm trying to understand. I'm trying to think of what an 8-pack of LaCroix is going to be.
I think I went.
Because I was thinking 8-pack of LaCroix could
be... I'll
be
honest with you, I think I went too low.
LaCroix spends it weird because it could be like $6, which is where I got the Gannon Burr at. Because I was trying to think near Calvin Heimberg.
Yeah.
But I don't know, like it can't be more than $6.
LaCroix is not cheap.
But then we're talking like $1.50 a can.
Yeah.
No.
That's hefty.
We're talking
a can.
It's
called
it
LaCroix.
Mm-hmm.
It's got a French name.
But if it is $1 per...
So you know it's a French name made in Kentucky. Where isn't it made in... Isn't LaCroix made in Kentucky?
Calvin Heimberg.
I don't remember.
I feel like
Calvin
that's a good
Heimberg.
One.
Okay.
I feel like that's a good
the
one.
The price of this pack of LaCroix is $5.39.
Okay.
Calvin's got to be like $7.
Mm.
Gannon Burr.
I forget our ceiling's 9.
Gannon Burr comes in at $6.28.
Okay. Not bad. Not bad at all.
Minus $5.39.
So you did a good job pricing him at 6.
89 cents difference. And Calvin Heimberg comes in at
12.587.
Oh.
I don't even remember what the
it's lower.
You did better because it's 539.
Yeah. I really thought Calvin was going to be higher than that. What the heck?
Well, Gannon's had a short career.
He's had a short career. So he's got a lot of money.
Top 10 all the time.
That's right. That's right. I forget. I forgot that that's how this works.
Nate Queen probably has a sneaky high one because he won 35 grand or whatever that difference. One time.
All right, let me get your guys' totals right now before we go into the last one. So right now, Connor has...
Yes, sir, Mr. Trevor, sir.
531 plus... this is just riveting stuff.
Riveting.
Ribbit.
Nice.
Thanks.
Noise.
Kermit the Frog.
Okay, Connor has $4.20. Right now is his total difference. Right, you want to have the least amount, remember.
Yep.
Hunter.
Golf rules.
229 plus 2.
Golf rules.
plus.
Yeah, dude, golf rules.
48. Hunter is at $4.90.
So what's our
70-cent different right now. I'm going to go ahead and try and
that
find.
This is anybody's game.
I'm trying to find a final object that is
Trevor,
tough.
Love this game. I absolutely love it.
Okay, let's see what we got here. Let's see what we got. What's really speaking to me? Find something that looks just absolutely delicious right now. Maybe I need to find something that's a little more standard. Okay. Okay, here we go. This will be a good one. This is a family size package of double stuff Oreos.
Ooh, I know the
Hunter
price.
Hunter knows it well.
This.
He knows it well.
I don't know the price.
Yeah, you do.
I have one in my pantry right now.
I know the price. I'm just trying to think of the player is the hard part right now. Family size?
Family size?
I just need like a list of the top 10 players.
Nobody's named anybody in FPO yet. Remember, they're also in this list.
That's terrifying.
Yeah, okay. That is terrifying.
Because like Chris and Tatar played over in Finland where C-tiers are winning like $120.
Gosh dang.
No, well, I'm just saying like that has to be a brutal on your cash per throw.
Yeah. True. To be fair, though, she also wins like everything over here.
Oh, yeah, but that's what I'm saying. I don't know. I have no idea where to estimate her at.
Yeah.
Much less Paige Pierce. Because then Paige has played some MPO events where she hasn't cashed.
Yeah.
So all right, I have mine.
All right, you go then.
I'm going Kyle Klein.
Kyle Klein.
Ah, see, I was hoping you'd go someone that I could like guess a price from. You know what? I'm going to just throw him out there. He's been out there a lot. He has the most unique players ever beaten.
Heck yeah.
Paul Ulibarri. No idea where he's going to be at, but I like just gambling. Just flipping a coin because he could be anywhere on that
leaderboard. But he's been playing a long time, though.
That's what he has.
Okay.
The Oreos are $3.89.
The Oreos are $4.89.
Ah! That's what I was thinking. I was thinking around $4 to $5.
They love 89s, man.
I was thinking
$4 to $5. Paul Ulibarri is $3.27.
That one hurts.
Putting you at about...
I'm so scared. Kyle 70. Klein, real
buck
dark 70 horse.
$1.70-ish. Kyle Klein comes in at $7.46.
Oh!
And Hunter is your winner. Kyle Klein is number three all the time.
I guess because short career, I guess.
The young bloods that are dominating right now are terrifying.
That was scary.
For reference, Kristen Tatar, Missy Gannon, Paige Pierce, Haley King are all very high on this list.
Mm.
They're all around the $5. Kristen Tatar's at $5.44, but nobody, they're not as high as some of those upper echelon.
I thought about
NPL
just
players.
Taking Kristen
Kevin
Tatar
Jones
just
also
for
very
fun.
High on this list. But
I should have done it.
Wow, what a thrilling
great job,
ending.
Hunter.
Kyle Klein was a trap card, man. Coming in, he is very high on that list.
You got to be scared of the young ones because they're winning so much money. So
just
young.
To be clear,
I was scared of those young ones.
I was scared of them. I'm terrified of Kyle Klein.
You weren't scared enough
Kryptonite.
Of the young ones.
And Egan McMahon was up there, too. This is a fascinating list.
That was a really fun game, Trevor. I really enjoyed that.
Thank you.
Who has the lowest?
All right, that's got to be.
I don't know. Wait a second. We have player profiles on here. Go to mine.
Well, it won't show you on there.
No,
will
you, can you?
Can I search you on here?
See, no. I forget how I was able to actually find mine again.
Trevor, that's
got to
be top three favorite trivia. Trevor's trivia.
Okay, see if I.
But you don't have a cash per throw, do you? We can figure it out, probably.
Does it have my throw count?
No.
Dang it. They must not keep that for, like, you know, guys like me. Whatever.
Oh, yeah, yeah, strokes. 2,347. Oh.
Okay.
Now, that $92 probably includes your AMs, but you've made $55. No, that was your best. You've made...
I've made 92.
$92 total. Yeah.
How many?
2,347.
Trevor, you showing up in your Bugatti 92 tomorrow?
Divided by 2,347. I've made about, if you round up, about 4 cents a throw.
All right, let's do mine. Dang,
that's dude. better than most.
It's probably better than mine. I got 8,728 throws.
Okay.
And I've made $1,557.
$1,557 divided by what?
8,728.
You have made about 18 cents.
Oh, get wrecked, son.
Oh, dang, dude.
Every five throws, I make a dollar.
I got wrecked, son. You're older than me, dude. I got 2 more years to recoup that.
You're going to throw 6,000 throws in 2 years?
Well, I don't need to recoup the throws, just the cash
for
throw.
Just cash.
I'm on the climb on that. If you made it just my pro career, which existed for 2 years, my cash for throw would be dirty.
You could say the same for mine. I don't know what my throw is.
I'm just saying that I think I've only played 3 MPO events, and I've... cash in 2 of them.
Well, my worst rating was 755 apparently at some point.
That's not good.
My worst rated round ever. Your worst rated round ever is 860.
Yeah, except that happened like 2 years ago.
That can't be worst rated round. I wonder if that's your worst average tournament.
No, I think it's probably about right for my worst rated round.
Well, my highest isn't right, and I don't think your highest is right.
What's my highest at?
970?
974?
Your highest rated round ever?
Oh, yeah. Definitely.
Trevor.
Yeah, it is.
No.
Yeah. It was at Seiko and or this last one I just played. I've never rated higher than that. You won Seiko that year with a 980 something.
But that's your highest rating ever.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I've never. You forget I've only played like probably
974.
I've probably only played like 10 tournaments in my whole life. Like if you look
at. You are not a good tournament player.
Hunter, how many tournaments have we played? I've played 21. How many have you played?
I don't know. I'll find out. I'm just saying, you are so much better than that. You should be like 974 rated.
You've played 86. You played 4 times the amount of events as
66.
I have. 66. Three times the amount. So that's what I'm saying. Like, it's experience.
My worst rated round ever was 742 at Discs for Devon. And my highest was 1045.
Yeah, I'm not a good tournament player, but I mean, I barely ever played tournaments.
That was at the Battle for Blue
Ridge. I do it for the love of the game, man.
Love the game. Wow.
Anyways.
Back to grip locked on.
Back on task.
Final topic, a little Champions Cup registration drama.
Just a little. Just a little bit.
Presnell tweeted this out.
Yep.
And he said, 16 touring pros on the waitlist for the at PDGA Major Championship Cup. That's how he tweeted. Somehow registration went under the radar, and we all don't get to play the major event.
Presnell lives for that, like... just like kind of stabby, like passive aggressive tweet. He lives for it.
I think there's points to be made on both sides here. Because let me read you this wait list on MPO. FPO.
Right, it's a criminal wait
FPO, list. FPO, there's like Jessica Weiss and Leah Senegeni, but there's not like
Emily FPO, Beach in there too.
Emily
man?
Beach is in there, but FPO, there's no one like, no offense, that notable. MPO,
crazy,
there's
shocking.
Some like pretty.
There's a lot of them.
MPO, we got, I'm going to just read names that I feel like we've mentioned on the podcast before. So that's the line we're going to draw.
Mm-hmm.
That way, if I don't mention your name and you're offended, I'm sorry, but I'm not sorry. Casey White, Evan Scott, Luke Humphreys, Noah Miensma, Matt Dollar, Nate Perkins, Zach Arlingus, James Conrad, Chandler Fry, Austin Hannum, Kevin Jones, Andrew Presnell, Garrett Gerthy, Andrew Marweed, Ezra Aderhold, and Aaron Gossage.
Huge names.
Dang.
There's 27 names. Total players on this wait list.
It's a big chunk of the field right there.
Those names, like, there's a few guys in there that could win this event.
Oh, yeah.
That just are, and they're not even like Casey White's first on the wait list. He's probably getting in. If you're high on the wait list, you're probably getting in.
But Marweed, Ezra
Aderhold
like
is 26.
They're not getting
Andrew
in.
Andrew Marweed's 25th on this list. Kevin Jones is 14th.
Mm-hmm.
James Conrad's 11th. Like they're
KJ's
probably
having
not
a good
in.
Season, yeah. too. And like he's about to hit his first major of the year and miss it.
Now, with that being said, there's 100 registered players on this list, and it's not like a bunch of randos got in. Like if you want to use the rating system, there's only 4 people outside of 1,000 rated that got into this event.
Mm.
And this event did have like a week for people who were invited, a week for 10-20 plus rated players, and then a week for 1,000 plus rated players before registration opened. So there was like, for a lot of these guys, they had 2 full weeks to register and just didn't. So basically, I think for that many people to have missed it, there was clearly some type of communication fault.
The problem is we don't know what the communication was. My thing is, if I was the PDGA or if I was whoever's in charge of it, who's is it still
Heinold's running it?
Oh, Heinold's right. So, well, if I'm anybody in charge of the registration, and a week goes by, and I know I'm looking, and I'm like, where's Kevin Jones at? Like, I'm like getting the message out, like, hey guys, registration's open. Like, I think there was, you're right, like, they probably did exactly as they said they would. They opened registration, this, that. But, like, there had to be a better job of, like, noticing that players are not getting the memo, so many guys, and, like, seeking them out, being like, hey, guys, you need to register.
But that's not really their responsibility.
Well, the problem, like I said, the problem is we don't know how clear it was. Like, because if it's a major tournament, though, and, like, such a crucial event to be registered for, and all you're getting is one email, I don't know if that's enough.
I think it's fine.
I don't know if it's unacceptable, but, like, yeah. why not? I
mean, it's a courtesy thing. Like, sure, they could have done more. We don't know what they did, so maybe they couldn't have done more. Or but, even, like, based on how many people missed.
Like, registration opens today.
They might have done that. Based on how many people missed, sure, there had to be something. But where I lean on it and stand on it is it's not the PDGA or Nate Heinold or Jamie Kemp as the assistant tournament director. It's not their responsibility to hold these pros' hands.
You're right.
And
no, you're right about that.
Be like, now, wait a second.
Clearly enough guys got registered.
Mr. Conrad, we noticed you're not registered for our event. We'd like to send you an email in regard. Like, it's not their responsibility. Enough guys got the memo and registered.
I'm more so saying that if I were them, that's what I would have done just because I want them to be in the field. Like, I would have been, like, concerned. But you're right. Like, it is, like, there are enough guys in the field that obviously it was just, like, some people, it just passed them by. And whether, for whatever reason, like, people just didn't see it for some, I don't know. It's a very weird one. I'd be curious to know, like all the people that actually are registered are probably, would probably say, well, like, yeah, like, I did it just like any other event. But the people who aren't registered, like, I want to know, like, what their reasoning is. Like, why was this different? I know that, like, people are used to being signed up for everything, like, automatically, like, with the Pro Tour. So, like, I think that's where this probably happened. But it's not great. Like, it's a bummer.
It's a bummer, but, like, here's what I'm going to be bummed about. Could have been worse. I'm going to be bummed if they're bailed out, to be completely honest with you. I'm be bummed if the PDGA just bends and lets all them into an event.
Yeah, I don't think they will.
I don't think they should.
I don't think they will.
Because, I mean, I'm trying to find someone responded with a screenshot to show the different tiers. So registration opened for them, if they weren't invited, February 6th. They had the full week of February 6th and February 13th. There were still spots because, again, four sub-1,000 rated players got in. So the full week, February 6th, and the full week, so February 6th to February 20th, basically the whole month of February they had to register and didn't.
I mean, yeah, there was.
And, like, the event's in April, so I was wondering, like, okay, well, maybe the registration happened in, like, October or something wild, it's just, also like, way out of the range.
It's preseason, too. Like, yeah, I don't know. Like, who's dropping the ball there? And, like, how many of those guys on that wait list? I'm trying to think if I know of any of them are, like, rep. Well, I know Double G is represented to some extent. Like, if those are guys who are represented by any kind of agency, like, oof.
It's definitely an interesting one.
That doesn't look great.
It's definitely an interesting one. I think a big thing that does play into it is, like, the people who signed up for, like, the tour card that gets you into all pro tours.
Right.
It probably just is like, oh, I'm good for the season when you still have to register for majors.
It's a weird one because I'm just thinking of myself, and, like, I think that I'm the type of person that would have been careful about this, but I'm also...
But how, like...
I can see myself just, like, getting my registration done for the year with the Pro Tour situation and kind of, like, not even thinking about the fact that the Pro Tour doesn't run this major.
No, like, I could see both sides, but, like, to me, at the end of the day, enough players got the memo that it couldn't have been that mysterious.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know.
And point also, I don't think that the tournament director, like, Nate Heinold, he might not have noticed. Because, like, if they weren't on the wait list yet, like, I can't say that I would be looking at this list of massive names and be like, now, wait a second, where's Kevin Jones?
Yeah, I mean, that is a valid point.
Because, like, all these guys are registered. I'm looking, like, Paul's there, Ricky's there, Eagle's there, AB. I'm probably not even scrolling down to find where some of these guys are missing.
If you would have asked me to scroll through there, I probably wouldn't have been like, where's Kevin
Jones? Like, if I scrolled through this list, I probably could have picked out, like, oh, Ezra's not here. Oh, maybe I would have picked out, oh, KJ's not here. But I probably would have missed, like, Conrad or something. Like, I would have missed someone on that end. So, and I also, again, I don't think it's the tournament directors. They already too
know,
much on
their
plate running a major.
Like, why did this happen this year, not last year? Like, what?
I think Champions Cup last year was, like, a new event. There's a lot of hype around it.
Yeah. That's the first major of the year, though. Like,
don't know. It's definitely interesting enough to be a storyline, but at the end of the day, like,
imagine that feeling though of like you all of a sudden somebody's like, "Hey, did you register for Champions Cup?" And you're like a big pro, and you're like, "What?" And you're like, "Oh my gosh, it's filled up!" Like, imagine that, just being like, "Well, not going to get to play the first major of the
year." No, I can see why people would be upset. If I were a player, I would be upset.
Oh, it's just that's a bummer, man.
But it's more so like you got to be upset at yourself because again.
At the end of the day,
so many of your peers registered.
I really want to know. I mean, I literally asked Gannon about it, and he was like, I kind of just said, well, I mean, you got in, so it must have been possible. And he literally said, yeah, I don't even know how I got in. I think my mom did it for me.
So well, that should be, in my opinion, that should be the responsibility of managers, possibly. I don't think that in disc golf.
Well, KJ is
in disc golf. I think this should be lined up with sponsorship in most sports, and in the future disc golf that shouldn't happen, but in disc golf it wouldn't surprise me if like Prodigy was like, "We're going to sign you up for all your events." That's obviously not what happened because it didn't. Mm-hmm. But like I think that at some point, like players having tour managers and stuff, and players being represented by agents and all this stuff where they're managing their tour, they're managing their social media, they're managing, I could easily see where it'd fall through the cracks.
It's definitely going to make a qualifying round.
Qualifying round's going to be electric.
It's going to be electric.
Yeah, because now you're going to have 16 top touring pros, if they all show up, bidding for their spot at
Monday
qualifying.
Especially like KJ, man, he's been playing well. Like, you see, good timing for a major to come around. Oof.
Like, what a storyline if they get in for Monday qualifying and win the thing.
That'd be a trivia question. Like, what Monday qualifying player won? And you'd be like, what? Like, what? Some rando?
How did Kevin Jones, he had to Monday qualify for this event?
Like, how does that make any sense? Dang, dude, I'm going to come and write that down for like 20 years from now, Trevor's trivia.
Yeah, when our sons are sitting here.
We're like, how much does a gallon of milk cost compared to cash per throwing? Like, well, that should be about $23, so.
Well, then at that point,
I got to pick Eustace Robinson. Best player in the world in 2020.
Oh, wow.
Or 2056.
Eustace?
Yeah, Eustace Robinson.
Where's he from?
He's a long descendant of Isaac Robinson.
Ooh, yeah, yeah. So what country is he from?
No, he's from America. He's out of Georgia, man.
That's just what names are like 20 years from
now. Yeah, I hear that Eustace came back in style.
I hear they've got a great Eustace selection.
That's funny. Eustace.
No, I got it.
Eustace. That's why they named him Eustace. Eustace.
All right.
Eustace, we have a problem.
We'll talk to you next week.